adesso parte il tiro, rete, 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 un gol straordinario.
And welcome to the show, everyone. I'm your host this week, Paula Mangoni. Thank you for Michael for graciously allowing me to host. And to that, Michael, welcome.
Ciao, ciao.
And of course, what is it? Paju? No.
No, Juju.
Juju now.
Juju. Juju. Juju, Julian Dandel.
How's everybody doing today?
Not bad, Julian, not bad. And then, of course, Mr. Chris Buselli. Welcome.
Hello. Hello, everybody.
And that was, of course, Ciao Ciao by Representante de Lista from this year's San Remo. So, Michael, last week we were talking about how I placed a bet on Jenny Morandi to win. He actually finished third, which is
incredible.
Incredible, exactly, exactly. Even he was surprised that that he finished third. Massimo Ranieri was also surprised that he finished eighth in the top 10 with his song. And I was close. I said, I guarantee you, I'm like, there's going to be a big wave of nostalgia for Morandi. And it almost carried him through. But of course, Mahmood and Blanco won with the song Brividi. I would recommend go check it out if you like, you know, the new age music. It is honestly, it's undeniable that Mahmood has talent. He has a good voice. And of course, it was the song that would set up to win.
Let me tell you this. Okay. Yeah. You were surprised Jenny Morandi finished third, right?
No, I'm not surprised.
Oh, okay, not surprised. Well, I am surprised that Jenny Morandi finished San Remo at all. He's 77 years old, the man went the whole week. Zing.
Zing. He was also there with Lorenzo Giovanotti, who was a big rapper, freestyler in the early 90s. I remember when I was in Italy, I went to this thing called Jova Beach Party, which is hosted by him, and he was there, and he won. Actually, Morandi won best cover with his medley of his old song. So I mean, he put on a great performance, and I think Sanremo was better off for it. I would say. Okay. Anything else, Michael, on Sanremo? You want to get anything?
No, I guess just great job, Mahmood and Blanco.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get into the action. So first game in Serie A was actually Roma-Genoa. It ended in a 0-0 draw. So just two things I want to touch on, guys. The foul, so Zaniolo scored, but then it was called back for an Abraham foul. And then Zaniolo's second yellow card, because he scored, took off his jersey, and then I guess told off the ref, and then got a second yellow card. So, thoughts on that? Let's go Michael first.
I mean, it's tough for sure. I think Mourinho had some choice words after the match as well, but I mean, they're a squad who can't afford, unfortunate results, and this is that. I think they did their best, and it's just they didn't provide any sort of satisfactory result for themselves before that, and that's really what did them in. Because again, outside of a foul, which, you know, is it a foul? Yes. Is it not something we see later on in the week? It's you know, it's unfortunate for Roma, but I mean, again, they probably should have been able to handle it before that.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to ask you, because you know, you understand some Italian, and you've been in Italy and watched the Domenica Sportiva, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there was, or excuse me, it was actually 90th minuto.
Okay.
So Italy's former women's manager, who's a commentator on Noventesimo Minuto, so the 90th minute in English, said that Zaniolo non va educato, which means he's not polite, he's not educated in a sense of being having manners. What did you, I want to get your thought on that before I move to the rest of the guys.
Yeah, like he isn't polite in. Yeah, I mean, he's not. I think there's this like aura around Zaniolo because of just the way he has behaved outside of Calcio. And, you know, it's caught up to him, especially since he's been out. He's not the golden boy because, you know, he was good, you know, 3 years ago. Now he's just kind of like a little bit of a scapegoat for a lot of these, I guess, Roma people looking to throw shade on Roma, right? Because it's easy to do that. It's easy to do it when they're not doing well. But, you know, knowing the quality that Zaniolo has, I think it's, again, it's easy to do that. It's easy to say, yeah, like he doesn't perform well. He doesn't like act well because he doesn't do it outside of the pitch. But on the pitch is where he needs to perform. And that's the only way that he's going to dispel any of that kind of chatter, right? Like he has to just shut them up by performing and being there. But it's funny nonetheless.
Yeah. So Julian, I want to get your thoughts on the foul, the double yellow and the so-called controversy.
I mean, I still think it's foul. In real time, I thought it was a foul when they. Well, I shouldn't say in real time. When they showed the replay, I thought it was a foul. I still think that. Those are called literally 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Tammy's slightly late. He catches them. It's foul. Now, I do understand that rule. It's a weird rule, but they can't really do anything to overturn it. He's not the first one to tap into where they take their shirt off after a goal and the goal gets called back. So I don't think they'll ever take that rule back. Maybe players should just stop taking their shirts off after they score. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a thing forever, right? Like,
yeah, for sure. Especially in a last minute game. I get it.
Yeah.
But he needs to learn how to calm himself down. You can't.
Yeah.
He is still young, but you can't lose your head like that. Now, not only would you weren't there for your team the last 5 minutes, you now are suspended for the next game. It's just completely unnecessary.
And that's what I mean. Like he has to be able to perform and shut people up without doing those extracurriculars, which is what people will talk about, right?
Mm. Yeah. Chris, your thoughts?
I agree with Julian there. I think it is a foul at the end of the day. With regards to the shirt coming off, yeah, I mean, I agree with Julian again, just don't take your shirt off if you're really that concerned about it. But at the same time, I would just add, he knew he got the yellow for taking his shirt off. So shut up. Like, you know, if you say certain things to the ref, you're going to get another card. So I don't feel bad for him. Does he need to mature? Sure, all that stuff. I kind of get Cassano vibes just with. It's an attacking player, super talented, but not realizing his potential. Now, I know there's different reasons, and Yolo's been injured, whereas if Cassano was about partying and drugs and this and that. But and
Nutella.
so, yeah, I just think it might mean a change of scenery. That might be what's best for him. Now, I know we're looking ahead now, but, yeah, it was a foul, in my opinion. And, I was expecting some sort of comment from Mourinho. I think we've come to expect that when they lose or draw a game that he wasn't expecting to
but
lose or draw.
Isn't there some truth in his words, though, Chris? That, you know, that,
which
that,
part?
This wouldn't happen to a bigger team. Like, he called Roma a small club, and he's probably right in the sense that when compared to Inter, Milan, Juventus.
I mean, VAR is VAR. It's good some days. It's terrible the next. So,
but well, I'm talking about the second. But that too, VAR.
Oh,
yeah.
You're talking about the second yellow.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that depends on the player, not so much the club. And I've said this before. I think what you do over the course of the game, what you say over the course of a match to a referee can come back to bite you in the ass. I don't know what was said, obviously, over the course of the game, but I think it depends on the player, not so much the club.
Yeah, well, That's good. Also,
like Chiellini would not have got a second.
I'm not picking on him.
He's been around the block. He's smart. He knows how to work the refs. He knows how to work the ARs. He knows how to get in his opponent's head. So I'm sure that there are, you know, dozens of other examples I could give, but that's more of a compliment to Chiellini to say that he wouldn't have got a second yellow there.
Michael.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say again, he's already had this conversation with his players this season, right? Like we literally talked about it, I think, two podcasts ago or whenever it actually happened as well. With Cristante complaining and whatever he's saying, you know, you're not Bonucci. Bonucci can do that because, you know, Bonucci has basically, I guess, learned to do it, but also he is revered in some capacity for some reason, right? But again, that's the that's the idea, though, right? Like, you need to be able to earn that, and, you know, just doing it doesn't give you that the right to complain. Like, they're gonna card you, and they did.
Yeah. Julian, any last thoughts before we move on?
No, I think we're good. I think we.
Okay, so all right. So I guess the biggest game of the weekend, Chris, I'll give the honors to you.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this last week, but it was a 12 o'clock Eastern Standard Time kickoff, which I know we usually expect the biggest game of the weekend to be at 2:45, but I think we mentioned that it was. Ideally, to get more of the Chinese audience, is that what we said last week, guys?
Yeah, exactly.
With that start time, so yeah, interesting match for sure. Obviously, a lot on the line in terms of the table. If Inter comes away with the win, they really separate themselves from the rest of the pack. If Milan can win, they close that gap. You know, despite Inter still having a game in hand. First 10 minutes were kind of frantic from the Milan side. Inter, you can kind of tell, were more organized from the get-go. And it was the ninth minute, actually, a cross came in from the left side to the back post, and it was Teo Hernandez and Dumfries who go up for the ball. I thought it was poor defending from Hernandez. At the same time, I thought Dumfries got up pretty well. I also thought that Maignan should have done better making a save, but Dumfries did well to put it in nonetheless. It did get called back, though, from VAR. I believe it was offside. I can't remember. Julian, maybe you can help me out with who was called offside. Do you remember?
Perisic.
So it was Perisic.
Yeah, the ball to play him through down the wing. He was like a foot offside.
Right. So that got called back. So still 0-0 at that point. A couple of other chances for Inter, you know, in the 5-10 minutes that followed that. Specifically, though, 27th minute, Dumfries had, you know, an A-plus scoring chance. I for sure thought it was going to go in. Paulo, I know you claim it was shot right at Maignan. It was very close to him, I'll give you that, but it was struck with a lot of power, and I still think Maignan did well to make the save there. And
yeah, I mean, he made himself big. I mean,
yes, he did. And I'll add, though, I thought he also did well to not offer up a good rebound to lead to another scoring chance for Inter. And then just a few minutes after that, Tonali had a long shot, which was kind of the first time Handanovic really got tested. But it was the 37th minute when Inter made it 1-0. Corner kick from Inter's right-hand side. And fantastic finish to Perisic. I'm pretty sure he hit it first time. But I have to question Milan's defending. Again, I don't know if it was zonal. I don't know if it was man-marking. But nonetheless, a player of Perisic's ability shouldn't be given that much space. So clearly an assignment was missed, but that makes it 1-0 going into half. Pioli finally made some changes. Inzaghi at this point made some changes. We're approaching the 75th minute here. Julian, I'll let you comment later, but I think it's well known that Inzaghi made his changes because he's trying to kind of save some legs for the congested schedule that's coming up for Inter. But 75th minute, it was a shot slash cross from Brahim Diaz, who had just recently come on. And it ends up to Giroud, who taps it in 1-0. And then 78th minute, Calabria plays it into Giroud. A lovely turn with his left foot on, he turns De Vrij, and then finishes it far post. Julian, I know you'll probably comment on Handanovic's abilities or lack thereof there, but that makes it 2-1. And then it was a pretty interesting final 10 minutes. It of course ended with the best left back in Serie A getting a red card. He took out Dumfries on it was a clear counterattack opportunity. I think he had to do that. It's similar to the Chiellini yellow card he got in the Euro final when he pulled down Saka. It's just one of those professional fouls, and ends 2-1 for Milan, who closed the gap, as I mentioned earlier, with Inter.
And Julian, go ahead.
So, no, you hit it pretty spot on. My biggest thing were, Inter were in control of this game in the first half. Maignan kept Milan in it. He had a fantastic game, was man of the match, in my opinion. And then Handanovic couldn't do the same. That I've been losing my mind over that second goal since it happened. He got down early enough, literally got a full palm on the ball, and somehow didn't have enough power to move it. Like, I don't get it. I'm just still so frustrated and confused.
It's the power of Giroud.
I just don't get it. Anyways.
An Axe body deodorant.
This is honestly, though, one of the first games where Inzaghi got his subs completely wrong. I've mentioned, I don't even know how many times now on this pod, taking off Lautaro and keeping Dzeko on is never a good idea. Dzeko already looks like he's out of steam, I think, like, from the get-go. The guy's played, I checked earlier, he's played 200 more minutes already than Lautaro so far this season, so he's essentially played two more full games, and he just looks tired to me. Like, his touch is lazy, his... I don't know, he just... Every time he's running with the ball, I think he's going to lose it. His passes are always off. Like, I don't know. I don't see what Inzaghi sees in him. Sanchez had a fucking horrible, horrible substitute appearance. That's not the first time he's done that, actually. But he got the ball for that first goal. He got the ball head down at half and tried to dribble and lost it. You can tell I'm still frustrated by it, but... the difference to me was the goalkeepers and Inzaghi getting his subs completely wrong. Now, I'm hoping this will serve as kind of a wake-up call because it has been a bit of a long, not a long time coming, but it's been coming. They had 120th minute win against Juve. They tied Atalanta 0-0. It took them the last kick of the game to beat Venezia. So hopefully this is a bit of a wake-up call for them.
Okay, Michael, your comment.
It's just nice to see a number two show up in that L column for Inter this year. I think that's important for the rest of the league, who have real ambition. It's nice to see that so far, they still have that game in hand, but it's a 1 point, Scudetto race at this point, effectively 1-3. So that's, fun to see, especially, sorry, Julian, but it's nice to see again a little bit of struggle from Inter, whereas they've been able to pull out the victories before that. And I just want to talk about that red card by Teo. I think that was stupid. And I get you're saying it's a professional foul, it's a counter, whatever. I honestly don't think he needed to do that. I get that it's, you don't want to give up the goal at that point, but I just think it was stupid to do because now he's gone for next game.
Is it a straight red?
It was a straight red.
Yeah. He's gone for the next two games.
Yeah. So I just don't think it was smart because there was coverage back there. There was coverage beyond him. And he just, I think because the play or two before he had also gotten fouled and he was pissed off. So he just went the other way and it was Dumfries, wasn't it, that he did?
Yep.
Yeah. So I think they'd been battling all game too, and I feel like that was just him, trying to get out some frustration on him or something. But again, I just thought it was stupid because it was a nothing play. They had enough coverage back there, and there was no point to actually, again, now get yourself suspended for two games.
Okay, so I got two comments. I want to continue on Mike's point about the red card. Afterwards, as Theo was going to, I guess, the locker room, was walking off the field, Julian, what happened? Something, there was some words exchanged.
Yeah, I mean, well, they had Lautaro came running over, and him and Teo exchanged words. Now Milan fans are watching a video that looked like it was shot on an iPhone 3, and they're claiming Lautaro spit on Teo, but I don't think that was the case. Mainly because if Teo actually got spit on, he would have A, lost his mind, and B, Milan would have brought it up to the ref right away. Now, again, a little bit my bias kicking in. Lautaro's also never done anything like that in his Inter career. I went back to check. He has one red card, and it was for two yellows for yelling at the ref, essentially. So he's never done anything where, like, he's kicked a guy or punched a guy or headbutted a guy or spat on a guy. Like, as much as he plays kind of all out on when he's on the field, he never seems to cross that line. So I don't – it makes no sense to me why he would do it at the end of a game. That's just my sense.
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, again, back to the red card in general, just quickly. Does that – that also is in effect for Copa games?
No.
No.
It is not.
No, it is not.
Separate competition.
Yep.
Okay. So then it, okay, the next two games that Milan player, Samp and Salernitana. So that's, you know, it's not as devastating as it could have been for sure for Milan, which I guess he probably knows and he's willing to make that sacrifice. But like, again, I just think it was dumb.
Yeah. Also, you know, any given Sunday as well, you never know what could happen in those next two games in Serie A. So we'll see. Another point, Chris, did you want to say anything before I say my point?
No, yes. The last thing I just wanted to mention, I don't think anybody is talking about him, and I get why, but Pierre Kalulu, I thought, had a very strong game. Again, I think nobody's talking about him for a reason, and that's because there were no big blunders. Not that he had to come in and save the day, but you know, obviously with Kjær and Tomori out and then Romagnoli being, you know, the senior back there, I think it could have been easy for him to get picked on and for, you know, if Milan had lost, for people to say, you know, oh, well, we had Kalulu at center back, so, you know, no shit, we lost. But I thought he was very solid back there. I still think he's better as a fullback, but just goes to show you, you know, how versatile he is. And, you know, he was brought in on very cheap deal, maybe even free. So I don't want to go on too long, but I just want to kind of give him a shout out because I thought he had a strong match.
I wanted to bring up, Julian touched on it, but I don't think he touched on the substitution that I thought made a difference. And I thought that was Çalhanoğlu coming off for Vidal. I thought that was a horrendous substitution. I thought that Çalhanoğlu was... he was essentially Inter's playmaker. He was controlling and dictating Inter's play. And as soon as Vidal came on, their whole style of play went to shit because Vidal is utterly useless now in his mid-30s. So I thought as soon as Çalhanoğlu came off, I think it was Inter's games to lose. Any thoughts on that, Julian?
No, I agree. The subs really pissed me off. I know Lautaro was just on an international break, so I think that's why he was taking him off. Perisic apparently had a strain in his calf, so he didn't want to push it. That's why he came off. And Çalhanoğlu was on a yellow, which is why I'm assuming Inzaghi pulled him off. But once you took those three off, Inter literally had nobody going forward. So from that point on, it was just trying to sit back and defend, which obviously didn't work. And then you're trying to go on and win the game after, but there's nobody on the field who's going to be a real difference maker at that point.
And of course, I guess no one is talking about, neither sets of fans are talking about Çalhanoğlu's impact, only because
he didn't do anything.
What I'm saying, not that he didn't do anything. I thought he actually had a decent game before he came off.
I would say he had an okay game, but like, I don't see how you can rate him better than, like, Brozovic was the best player on the field. So I would say Brozovic impacted the game more than anybody other than Maignan, because I think Maignan kept Milan in the game at times. And then, yeah, I mean, he whipped in a nice corner, sure. But like I said, Perisic was wide open. So I give more credit to Perisic for the finish than I do the corner. So I mean, you guys know how I feel about Çalhanoğlu, but I don't think he deserves any praise for
I'm not praising him. What all I'm saying is that the game changed as soon as Inter took off the midfield that was able to dictate their play. After that, they had nothing going forward, which is why they lost the game.
I mean, I obviously don't watch as Inter as much as Julian, but I feel like that's more of a knock on Vidal than it is a praise for Çalhanoğlu.
Listen, let me enter as the neutral fourth party here because I'll tell you why. Obviously, Chris and Julian obviously have their horses in the race. Paulo also had his horse in the race, and it was Çalhanoğlu, and unfortunately, him being subbed off compromised his bet this week. And that's who I follow.
You should have started with that, Paul. I would have left you alone.
Well, either way, I picked the double chance, so I still lost anyway. So, but anyway, that's besides the point. But all I'm saying is that the changes in midfield that Inzaghi made compromised the result, and we have Milan winning with their only. So Tonali had a shot on target. Wait,
yeah,
they had two of their three shots on target. That's it. And they did
Welcome
nothing.
To
they didn't.
Handanovic.
Yeah, but they did. They did nothing for 75 minutes of the game, except for Tonali's shot. That you can't deny.
What was the other game? Juve against Milan.
I knew it. I knew it. You're gonna bring that up. I knew you're gonna bring that up. I knew it.
I gotta defend my people.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, let's move on. Let's move on to the final game that Saturday, Fiorentina Lazio. So this is Fiorentina's first game without Milinkovic-Savic, and it was a bad game
without Vlahović.
Without Vlahović.
What did I say? Milinkovic-Savic.
Yeah. I think you're getting ahead of yourself.
I am. Yeah. So Vlahović, it was Serbian. The Serbian names get confused in my brain. But speaking of Milinkovic-Savic, he scored Lazio's first goal. That's where I got confused.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that was a nice goal in the 52nd minute. Immobile doubled up in the 70th minute, went 1-on-1 with Terracciano. And then Immobile created the third goal, which was an own goal by Baraghi. So here's another funny double yellow. I guess Torreira was already on a yellow card from early in the second half. And then 30 minutes later, he gets fouled and then turns to Sato and it just like yells at him. Like it was a blatant yell, probably told him to fuck off or something. Thoughts on that before we move on?
Bravo.
Chris, Julian, we'll go Chris first.
Yeah, I've just kind of compare it or relate it a bit to Zaniolo. You know what you're saying. They have a good idea of what's going to get them carded, so you just have to be smarter. But I know easier said than done, because when you're pissed off and tempers are flaring, you just say the first thing that comes to mind and you don't really have a filter. So he got what he deserved, I guess.
Julian, I think – I don't know if you were watching the games, but I remember we were messaging. You said that was Orsato's fault.
I remember saying that, but I don't actually remember off the top of my head that play.
So I think he got fouled from behind. Torreira did. And then Torreira turned to Orsato and then yelled at him. And then Orsato gave
a double. Oh, I just thought it was soft. Yeah, I just thought it was Orsato trying to, I don't know. I don't like
be dominant
to begin with. Yeah, it's just him. It's just
being Orsato.
Like, no, I'm the ref.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm in charge
here. He really said anything like soccer players get heated, they swear, and I get you can't swear to a ref, but like, I don't know, heat of the moment.
Yeah. Okay, so 3-0 win for Lazio, and there were some clips that showed some of Sarri ball that came back to Lazio. I think this could be the first time all year that we're talking about Lazio playing Sarri ball. So, just think about that. So it's what, the 6 months.
Game 24.
Yeah, game 24, exactly. Game 24. Michael, Atalanta, Cagliari.
Yeah, so we spent a lot of time on Inter and AC Milan. So we'll blow through this. Atalanta, you would think, are primed, I guess, at this point to kind of see out these teams. Cagliari, who is in Actually, before this game, they were in 18th, I believe, position. So in the relegation zone, Atlanta, of course, were holding fourth position. With all of that, it was actually Cagliari who ends up getting the opening goal. Cagliari, who didn't start with a proper striker in this game. Dalbert actually sends the ball through across to Pereiro, Gaston Pereiro, who slots it past Musso. And that's in the 50th. And then I think literally, play resumes 2 minutes later, Atlanta cough the ball up very cheaply at the back. And I believe it's Pereiro again running in, and Musso comes in to meet him just outside, just the edge and outside of the box. And basically his last man tackles Pereiro. So the chance is done, but of course the ref comes and gives him a red card. So just like that, Atlanta are down to 10 men and down 1-0. Albeit they were able to bring one back. Palomino scores in the 64th minute to even the score. But it's, again, Gaston Pereiro in the 68th minute who's able to make it 2-1, give Cagliari the lead again. It's, again, a little bit of just honestly poor defending by Atalanta. They didn't really have the fortitude in the back, and it kind of showed. And Cagliari honestly made quick work of them with two goals that, against the run of play, I would just say it was two goals that I think were preventable, and especially the red card, which was preventable. But it's, again, it did them in, and Atalanta find themselves not being able to take advantage of, the top of the table losing points. And unfortunately, they lose and gain no ground on the top four.
So in this game, Zapata got hurt and he's out for the next 4 months. So it's possible that Atalanta may look on the market for a free agent striker, an unattached striker. So I think probably the best one available is most likely Douglas Costa, now that Jovinko, after Gabbiadini. Yeah, got injured. That Jovinko is going to Sampdoria on a 6-month contract as well.
Diego Costa, you mean?
What did I say?
Douglas.
Jesus.
Douglas. Imagine.
Wasn't he young? He's going to LA.
He's going to LA. Yeah.
I'm getting confused with the last names.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, that's right. So I actually have some audio here from Mazzari's room after the game here. So I don't know if you're. I'll see if I can play this here. Tell me if you can hear it.
No word of a lie. I was gonna say nobody scores like Gaston.
Okay. I'm not gonna ask where that's from, but okay.
Beauty and the Beast.
It was it?
Actually, no. Like I said, it's Mazzari's locker room talk.
Okay. Michael, what do you think about the big dick energy on Musso's red card?
I thought it was it was Teo-esque. Well, I'll give you that.
Anyway, for those who don't get that joke, if you want Musso, post it on Instagram. Sorry.
Okay.
That showed him nude in a reflected in a mirror, and just nothing on, and just so hence the big dick energy joke. Anyway, but yeah, that's what I want to laugh today. So moving on, the game after that was Bologna Empoli, which ended 0-0. I think there was a first New Zealander to play in Serie A for Empoli. I think it was, let me look up the name here. Hold on. Gotcha. So for Empoli, I just wanted to bring that up. Next game after that was Sampdoria Sassuolo. absolutely dominated by Sampdoria. Caputo in the 5th minute, assisted by Kondreva. Sensi scored 2 minutes after that. Andrea Conti scored a nice goal in the 63rd minute, assisted by Kondreva. So 2 assists for Kondreva. And then he got the 4th goal in the 90th plus 1 minute. So 2 assists and 1 goal for Antonio Kondreva. Julian?
Hey, good for him. He always, like, I don't know, he was frustrating at Inter, but then he had, I'll never forget that goal against Lecce, so, good for him.
Yeah. Game after that is Venezia-Napoli. Osimhen, I believe, is its first game back, or maybe if I'm wrong.
Should be.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he left before. Yeah, this is the first game back anyway, so.
Yeah. Okay. So Osimhen gets a goal in his first game back from injury in the 59th minute, and then Petagna gets the second goal in the 90th plus 10, probably because there was a red card for Venezia. So then the game Sunday at noon, or 1800 hours in Italy, Udinese-Torino. Molina scores, I believe, on a free kick in the 90th plus 3rd minute, and then Pusetto with... On a penalty shot or a penalty kick in the 90th plus 7 after, was it a horrendous decision, Julian, by Vanya to foul? Was it Molina? Who did he foul? Molina again?
No, it wasn't Molina. I forget who he fouled, but it was just a comedy of errors from him. First, he didn't catch basically a long, not even through ball. Like, I was literally just kicked to him from half from Udinese, and he fumbled the catch. And then I forget which player jumped onto it, but yeah, he took him out from behind. Yeah.
So that game ended 2-0, and then Sunday at 2:45 is Juventus Hellas Verona. Of course, this is Vlahovic's first appearance for his new club. He actually gets Juventus's first chance early on in the game with a nice save from Montipo. 10 minutes later, Vlahovic scores his first goal in after 13 minutes with an assist from Dybala. Michael, would you describe it as a doink?
Doink indeed. Yeah.
So then in the second half, in the 61st minute, it was actually Morata who provided the assist for Zakaria, who also scores his first goal in his first appearance for Juventus. And there was an interesting stat from Optipolo, which said that this is the first time since September 11th, 2011, that Juventus had 2 players score on their debuts.
Can you guess those players?
Yes,
Julian. Julian, yeah. And Chris.
I saw the tweet, so I know who they are.
Chris.
2011?
Yeah.
Give me one of them, and then I'll try and guess the other one.
Your favorite player, Steven Lichtsteiner.
Interesting. I don't know, like Vucinic?
It was actually Vidal.
Close. Okay. Very close.
Arturo.
And then to finish up the game, Rabiot, who I don't think had a good game. I think that entire midfield didn't have a good game except for Zakaria. Had a long shot, stopped. And, okay, so let's get to the talking points. It was a game that, of course, Juventus played on the counterattack, but they created most of the opportunities. I think Verona only had one shot on target, even though they had more than half of the possession. So, Michael, I think we discussed last week as well, Morata was being played out of position for the first half of the season.
Yeah, and it really... It was a different dynamic in this game, and like you can tell that he is more comfortable playing as a second striker, right? As someone that he can, you know, he has someone to play off of. And it's just a world of difference. And especially on the assist he provided, obviously not to a striker, but to Zakaria, it was honestly like, I don't know where this Morata's been, and it's because he's been forced to be someone who's not who he wasn't. But again, he was able to kind of stay back like he likes. He pulled the ball and was able to be a playmaker. And it really, you know, it really highlighted how important it was to get him into a proper position. Because now, hopefully, you know, with someone who can actually act as a primary target man, He doesn't have that. He doesn't have the, I guess, the weight on his shoulders to provide what he can't provide, right? And I just want to note again that Vlahovic had he had two shouts for a penalty. The first one, I don't think it was. He was definitely, I mean, both times he was kind of looking for it, but the second one I think was a penalty, and it's, I mean, it is what it is in the game, but you know, these are the calls that happen to Inter and happen to Milan, and their fan bases go nuts and say, oh, well, if it happened to Juve, you know, you for sure they would get these calls. Well, they didn't get the calls. So shut up.
Good point, Michael.
Thank you.
So, obviously, you spoke about Vlahovic. You know, of course, I spent the weekend listening to the fan bases in Italy. And one of them made a comment that really kind of surprised me, in the sense that he said that outside of Vlahovic's goal, he didn't play well. What'd you think about that? What do you think about that?
Me?
Yeah.
I disagree. I think he wasn't, I mean, the be all and end all of the team. So I'm not sure what they were expecting from Vlahovic to score three goals. Like he was there. He had that very strong shot early on for Juve's first chance. And again, if it wasn't for a good save, that could have been a goal. But outside of that, again, like I understand what they're saying, because there was times when he could have had possession of the ball because the ball was coming to him, and he kind of laid it to the side and no one was there. So he I guess lost the ball, but that's, I would chalk that up to him playing in a different system. He doesn't know what the characteristics of the players around him are just yet. So it's, you know, I don't think that he didn't play well. I just think that it, you know, there was opportunities for him to understand this system better. But it didn't impede his ability to make an impact on the match.
Okay. So one last thing before I open it up to Julian and Chris. There was a hilarious picture that posted a picture of Del Piero and Ibrahimovic with the text of Dybala and Vlahovic. I thought about that, and it makes complete sense. I thought it was an apt comparison, in my opinion. You know, Dybala, who is the older captain of this team, you know, put aside Chiellini, you know, but mm-hmm. I think Dybala is the true leader of this team. And Vlahovic, who is kind of like a young Ibrahimovic coming from a smaller club, playing for Juventus. So I thought it was just an interesting comparison that I wanted to share. Julian, your thoughts on the game?
I watched some of it. I mean, yeah, you guys got most of it. I just gotta say, Allegri ball fucking sucks. Holy hell. Like, it's just like sit back and counter. Like, Verona ran play. Like, you're sitting back at home to Verona. Like, I get it, the 3 points are all that matters, but it's just like, fuck.
Non ti deve vincere di cento, Julian.
But yeah, like, I get it. You get the 3 points, you get the win, it's fine. But like, annoying to watch, in my opinion.
Yeah, I also want to note, again, you said that Rabiot didn't have a good game. He didn't, but just the reverse of that is, you know, you could have had Bentancur back there.
Yeah, good point.
And, you know what I mean? And like, I thought that at least this was the only leak in the midfield. And it was fine, because usually if that's the only issue, then that's okay. Because again, there was times, like you said, there's times when he's able to provide a little bit of a forward motion and actually go up and make an attacking, positive attacking play come from, you know, nothing, because he's able to get by somebody. So I'm taking that risk when there's no other risk there, for sure.
Chris, your thoughts?
Yeah, definitely not the most attractive, entertaining game. I'll just add for Verona's side that there was no Simeone and no Caprari, who are usually two of that front three with Barak usually. So I think them not being there obviously made things easier for Juventus, and it kind of, I don't want to say Verona's attack was stale, but they didn't have that usual bite to it. So, but I mean, team, that happens over the course of the season and you have to take advantage of it. And Juventus did.
We should note too that Szczesny had a couple of good saves as well. But yeah, to Chris's point, there was no one who could beat him, right? There's no one who can provide that final bit of, I guess, skill to
you
actually.
Not Kevin Lasagna?
Yeah, no, unfortunately. He had a couple opportunities, but nothing that was really, I guess, a threat.
Okay, so let's open it up to a wider discussion about the top of the table. So since the big game was won by Milan, let's give the first word to the resident Milan fan, Chris.
Do you just want me to comment on the game or
the state of play
of the table here at this point?
I see. I mean, I think Mike touched on it. Obviously, Inter, you know, losing a game finally, it makes things more interesting. I'm focused on the top of the table where Milan is in contention there, but I'm more so kind of looking at Roma, a team who, you know, just before Christmas, I thought had a shot at top four. Now it looks like they may not even get to play in the greatest competition on earth next year. Fiorentina has a game in hand. They're kind of losing a grasp of that spot there. And then Atalanta was, like you mentioned, Mike, that was kind of disappointing. So obviously the top of the table will get most of the attention, but those kind of 4 to 7 spots are what I'll be keeping an eye on the next few weeks.
And Julian.
I do, honestly, I kind of agree with you as well, Michael. Like, it's always good to have an entertaining title race. You don't want to be like the Prem where it's already said and done.
Germany, too.
Yeah, right? Like, we're not even 2/3 of the way through the season and their title race is already over. Like, that's no fun in that. Saying that, I mean, Inter obviously have Napoli next weekend on Saturday, so I hope they bounce back and come away with 3 points.
And Michael, you can wrap up the...
Yeah, so it's actually... So Italy, again, is 1 point separating first from three, and I guess technically, if we really want to say it, is, what, 8 points from fourth for Juve at this point?
Yeah.
But Spain is 6 points. That's the next closest. And then, like you said, Germany is 7, 8, 9. France is 7, and 6 is 13. And England is 2 and 7 is 9 as well. So, like, that's quite a big difference between first and second positions. And I just want to know, because Paul, I know you want to talk about it and whether or not Juve are, you know, if there's a chance there. If a lot has to go right, and Julian was saying this offline, I think, but, you know, it would really... There's obviously these teams in front of them that have to do poorly leading down the stretch here, because Juve have a lot of ground to make up, right? It's at least 8 points right now. Inter, if they win that game, it's 11 points.
Yeah.
So I don't see it happening, Paulo. I know you want to say that it's possible, but it's very unlikely that they'll catch that first position.
Okay, so I'll just say this. It is possible because the bookmakers made a change. So before this weekend, Juventus to win the title outright was 26-1. After this weekend is now 15-1. That went up almost tenfold.
Yeah.
Because they want people like you to throw $100 down.
Exactly. Exactly. A cheeky 100.
I put down 50 when it was 26-1.
So I'll give you this, Paulo. If I think we don't know what the likelihood of that really is going to happen. Like, we don't know how likely they are to come back into this race until probably the next round of games, because if, and actually until Inter really make up that that match is not played, because yeah, let's
probably
say
until March.
Yeah, let's say Inter lose that game in hand, so it maintains that this is the position, which likely won't happen, because who do they have to play?
Bologna.
Let's say that Inter lose that match, okay? So they're still this amount of points back. They do have to play Napoli. That's this weekend.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's good for those teams chasing, because, you know, one of those teams is going to be out, so there's a position to be had there. But, I mean, realistically, what we want, Paulo, you and I, is we want a draw here.
Yes.
Because then... from that, Juve, let's say Juve wins, then again, that gap obviously
closes down to five.
Closes, exactly.
Well, six.
So, you know, then if that happens and let's say Inter lose that other game, then I will give you this 15-1 kind of shot, because then 6 points is two matches. 6 points is two games of losses that could happen, but is really still a long shot. But again, I'm giving you that it's much more likely.
Yeah, well, because let's say Inter win against Bologna, it's 11 points. But let's count that game as
win.
Yeah.
Okay.
They drop points, preferably a draw against Napoli. So we're 9 points. Juventus still have to play Inter head to head. Then Julian, help me out with look at Inter's schedule here.
That's the funny thing though. Like everybody's talking about their tough February, but they've already played Lazio, Atlanta, Milan, and soon to be Napoli.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, honestly, the two big games that Inter have left are Juventus and then Roma, and both are being played in April.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see at that point. I mean, obviously, you have the teams, Fiorentina, the Sassuolos, those teams.
And yeah, of course.
Are always capable of an upset. But...
exactly. And Inter usually do have trouble with Sassuolo historically.
Yeah.
And Fiorentina also historically.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like I said, anything can happen at this point. It depends if Inter can beat the teams that they usually struggle against, Sassuolo, Fiorentina, and honestly, the same could go for Milan. They have to play Sampdoria in the noon game, the 12:30 game in Italian time, without Theo Hernandez, the quote unquote best left back in Serie A. and I don't think tomorrow he's going to be ready yet to play in that game.
The only thing I will say that you're forgetting in all of this is that Juve themselves will have to basically win out.
Yeah, listen, the reason why I'm not doubting that is because it's already happened once before.
Okay, you know, it happened 6 years ago.
Yes, but anyway, I'm just saying that.
With the same coach, you're saying.
Yes, exactly. There is historical precedent of a comeback, of a double-digit comeback.
Listen, I'm going to say. Paulo, I want it to happen as much as you do. I'll give that. I think we should note though that a lot of this is gonna depend on, obviously, like you said, these tough matches that they can get through for Inter, but also for Napoli and Milan. But I think Milan have the advantage at that point because they don't have to play European soccer, right? Like you have Napoli who have to play Barcelona after Inter. And then a couple of weeks later play Barcelona again and Inter play Liverpool. So like these are not teams that you can just play your B side against, right? Like it's these are actual squads that you're going to have to provide a real, a professional squad to show up. Right. So it's not going to be as easy as Milan might have it. So I think we're going to see probably Milan make a little bit of a push in the next couple of weeks.
So, Michael, you mentioned Atalanta. You had this at Atalanta during the Atalanta review. They also have to play Torino the following week after. So it's Atalanta and then the
Juve do.
Yes,
yeah, 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 yeah.
So I think just as these two games that Inter played, you know, on Sunday, and then they have to play against Napoli coming up. I think the next two games for Juventus are almost as crucial as the two games that Inter have played or will play.
Yeah, and I just also want to note, too, while we're still talking about this, so Atalanta as well, who are in Europa League, their next games are, including this week's Copa, Fiorentina, Juventus, Olympiacos in Europa League, then Fiorentina, then Olympiacos again. And that is until, I guess they have Samp to finish out February, but like that's not an easy February.
Yeah,
especially... Well, especially for a team now who might not have a Zapata, right?
Yeah. And so you can also say the exact same thing for Inter, right? Roma, Coppa Italia, Napoli, Serie A. And then I think the next game after that is Liverpool.
Yeah.
So then you can argue with Juventus. It's Sassuolo, Atalanta, Torino, and then it was Villarreal, and then Empoli. Okay, so I think that was a good discussion on the top half. Julian, I think it's Julian, right? That's doing the last game. So Salernitana, Spezia.
So this one was a very entertaining start, and then unfortunately not much happened shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
I believe we decided this one was our goal of the week. Simone Verdi in his first appearance for Salernitana.
Well, his two goals were the goal of the week. So.
But
which one do you have? Is it the first one you have keyed up?
Yeah, we chose the first one.
Okay.
So his first game for Salernitana, free kick, probably 20 yards out or so.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Verdi's first attempt and the perfect debut, discarded by Torino. And Verdi, in the hearts of the Salernitana fans, inside 3 minutes.
Gorgeous free kick.
Yeah, so he was on the left side, I guess, facing the net, and he tucked it in basically right inside the post, top corner. Very nice shot. Shortly thereafter, a bit of a disaster in the Salernitana box. Fazio was slightly late on Ehrlich, I believe, and fouled him. So Manai put that penalty away. Then Verdi gets a second chance at a free kick, this time a little further out, but basically puts it in the exact same spot. Another beautiful, beautiful shot. And then a little bit of luck for Spezia, as I think it was off another corner. I'm not sure. It was near post. I'm not sure who flicked it on, but it basically went up right into one of the new Salernitana signings, Musse's hand. He actually kind of looked like he swatted the ball away. But Daniele Verde was able to slot that one away to make it 2-2. And I feel like Salernitana will feel a little bit hard done by this. I know Castanos had a couple chances in the second half to put it away. And I thought, given the way the game went, they should have also been awarded a penalty later on. I didn't see a close-up review of it, but the ball was sent in, and it looked like it hit the Spezia player on the shoulder, upper arm area, but VAR reviewed it and said no penalty. So this one ends at 2. Now the bottom of the table, we have a Cagliari who were able to climb out of the relegation zone. So Venezia's 18th with 18 points, Genoa 19th with 14, and Salernitana 20th with 11. I think it's all but said and done for them, unfortunately. Genoa with a little bit of work. Cagliari's sitting in 17th with 20, then Samp at 23, and Spezia at 26. So they're starting to kind of pull away from the bottom two teams. Venezia is going to be in a bit of a dogfight.
Yeah, so I don't know, Michael, I don't know if you mentioned earlier, but it was 10 points in 5 games to start the season for Cagliari. So, I mean, on that form, I think they could pull away. I think Venezia have lost 4 of their last 5 games. So I guess the form is starting to now take shape. It's going to take, a miracle for Salernitana to come out. But, I mean, they played well in this game, Julian. I never say never. we've seen. There was another miraculous comeback, if I remember. Was it? It was.
Not sure which one you're talking about.
You tell us.
It was all. It was in the Premier League. Someone made like a miraculous escape. I can't remember who it was, but I was also in Serie A. Wasn't it like Empoli that also survived a while back? It could also have been Genoa as well that came out under. I think it was Davide Nicola as well. Crotone. There's another
Crotone
one.
Maybe. Yeah, I think I remember that Empoli won.
Yeah. So it's not over. I remember Crotone was like down and out, but like Davide Nicola rescued them. And I remember it was that he was going to do like a marathon or a bike. He's going to bike across.
I remember that now.
Yeah, yeah. So that was one. I mean, so it's not over. And they played well. You know, the new signings came in, had an impact. I thought Fazio had a decent game, even though he's you know, Federico Fazio. and Verdi scored two goals. So I think the team that is in trouble, I think it's Venezia now. So, Chris, thoughts?
I'm just bringing up the table again here. Give me one second. Venezia, tough to say. I wouldn't even count Sampdoria. I wouldn't say Sampdoria are in the clear. Even if you just look at their last five matches, they've only won one of them, lost the other four. So in terms of overall form, Sampdoria is probably the worst out of that bottom five there.
But the new manager, so Gianpaolo got his ass kicked the game before the international break, had 2 weeks, and then beats Sassuolo, who's, you know, one of the better mid-table teams, 4-0.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And again, there's usually that bump in results, positive bump in results when the new manager comes in. But yeah, I wouldn't count Sampdoria out. So that for me, it's that bottom five that are all in trouble. And obviously, Salernitana are doomed, but it goes without saying.
I think Sampdoria, though, have a secret weapon now, and that's Jovinko.
Yeah. Imagine.
I guess all that bitching and complaining found him a job, eh?
See.
Yeah. What did I want to bring up? It was, oh, yes. Thiago Motaball won him manager of the month for the month of January.
Yeah, well, I mean, he won a lot of games for Spezia.
You can't beat this guy. Huh?
He's unsackable. It's unsackable.
I mean, didn't he get embarrassed? You know, yeah, he got embarrassed with Genoa. That's because he tried to play what was it? A 2-7-something?
2-7-2
was it?
Something along those lines.
Yeah, or 2-6-2. I think it was a 2-6-2. That's what it was. 2-6-2. Chris, do you remember that?
I remember it being something ridiculous. I feel like there was a 7 in there. Not that it makes it any better. But yeah.
So I guess he's learned from his crazy, wacky mistakes. Okay, so that's it for the bottom of the table. I honestly, sometimes I do think the bottom half, the relegation race, is a lot more intriguing than the top of the table. But I guess this year may not be the case because of this loss by Inter. And a, dare I say, possible Juventus comeback. We'll see. Okay, so that, anything else on Serie A before we end it here? Julian, then Michael, then Chris.
No, I'm good. I think we touched on a lot. So,
Michael?
Yeah, no, same.
Okay, and Chris, you're good?
Yeah, good as well.
Perfect. So with that, let's take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. And welcome back, everyone, to the show. Michael, what did you think of that song?
I thought it was, you know, it was okay considering. that this man is 77 years old.
Yeah, okay, I'll accept that. For the non-Italian listener or song listeners here, Julian, Michael, what'd you think? Sorry, Julian, Chris.
It was an entertaining song.
Yeah. Okay. Like, is it me or is the urge? We're all from the Fresh Prince of Bel Air generation. Was that the urge just to dance like Carlton Banks when listening to that song? Or is it just me?
It might just be you.
It's okay. Just you.
Yeah. I feel like you respond very well to a lot of the songs that we play because either I can tell when you're dancing. I don't know if it's because I can hear your shuffling or something.
All right. On that note, let's stand dando forte. Let's go hard, and yeah. Let's get back into it. Who wants to take on the Coppa Italia preview for this week?
Yeah. Well, let's open all of the doors to the Coppa Italia that's going to happen this week. So, starting on Tuesday's matchup. So obviously this is the quarterfinals of the Coppa. We start with Inter versus Roma, and that's on Tuesday. On Wednesday, we have Milan versus Lazio. And then on Thursday, we have a double bill of Atalanta-Fiorentina and followed by Juventus-Sassuolo. So that's the quarterfinals for Coppa this week.
And Julian, you have a very strong opinion on this Coppa Italia now.
Yeah, I just want my rematch. So Milan and Inter are on the same side, so we can get a Milan derby semifinal. Or, I mean, if both teams lose, you can get a Rome derby semifinal. So.
Yeah, that'd be entertaining as well. Yeah. Honestly, I was in Rome when a Rome derby was played. Honestly, I think that's more aggressive derby than any other derby in the country, a Rome derby. I mean, they, like, both sets of fans hate each other with a passion. I mean, like, Milan fans, Inter fans, they're kind of more civil, even though there were some altercations after this derby, the Milan derby. But yeah, no, it's just the Rome derby is on a whole nother level. It is something incredible just to be in the city for. It's pretty special. On the other side of the bracket, Michael, we have Juventus Sassuolo and Atalanta Fiorentina. So do you think we'll see a Juventus-Atalanta semifinal?
Yeah, I mean, it's very likely. I would like to see a Juventus-Fiorentina semifinal because it would just be hilarious. But
yeah. Okay, so honestly, and they want to get rid of the Coppa Italia? Just remember that. We had this discussion a few weeks ago.
Well, I think there's other opportunities for Serie A to grow, and I think that's probably why. They're just looking for other ways that they, you know, can perhaps expand. Good segue.
Yeah, I was about to say, good segue. So, good segue, Michael. So this is where we talk about those ways to expand. There was an article that came out, I guess, this past week that stated that Serie A is looking to hold a North American tournament in parallel or during the World Cup in November, December. What do we think about that? Let's go Julian first.
I actually don't mind the idea, and I know it might sound a little crazy when you say it out loud, but what got me thinking was, okay, so a lot of these teams, especially the smaller teams, they're not going to have, they may have a couple guys who are gone for the World Cup, but majority of their team is still going to be there. Now, the obvious issue is, oh, well, they're not going to have games on while the World Cup is on. But that's honestly a non-factor if they're playing in North America. When I checked, I think Qatar was 13 hours ahead, I believe. So realistically, actually, no, I think it was even more. Realistically, the games for like Eastern Standard Time for the World Cup are going to be played more than likely between midnight and noon. So there's literally, if they're in North America, they have all afternoon or evenings to play, and there won't be any, they won't have any run-in basically with the World Cup. Now,
Julian, Qatar is 8 hours ahead. It's 8 hours ahead a.m. right now for them. Yep.
Okay, so yeah, that makes sense. You're right. So yeah, so basically the games would be between midnight and noon, which is 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Yep.
So I don't see it, like, there's not going to be any overlap in terms of when the games are played. The main concern, obviously, would be injuries for players, but I actually don't think this is necessarily a bad move.
All right, let's go Michael, then Chris.
Yeah, I think the obvious, again, thing here is their concern about not making the World Cup, and that's why they're trying to, you know, have something to, I guess, shine a light somewhere else, if that's what ends up happening. But again, if instead Italy does go to the World Cup, then do we see this, like, is this the only time that we're going to hear about this? You know what I mean? Like, are they just going to forget about it and say, okay, well, maybe we'll try something some other time? I think, like Julian said, I think it's a good idea because, you know, it is a, selfishly, it's something that I'd like to see here more, be able to kind of see these games and see these teams. But again, just like years ago when they would go out east to promote the league, you know, maybe now it's time for them to come out west and try and have a little bit more of a footprint and a presence.
Yeah, and I mean, realistically, the World Cup's a full month, right? So the teams, regardless, they're going to be having friendlies during that month because they're not just going to not play. So why not come to North America?
Yeah.
Chris?
Yeah, I don't know if running a tournament at the same time as the World Cup will help or hurt what you're trying to do in terms of, I mean, we can all agree that they're trying to, like Mike just said, you know, market the event, market the league, promote the league, so on and so forth. I don't know if having at the same time the World Cup hurts you because everybody is just so consumed with the World Cup and not paying attention to anything else, or does it help you because everybody is tuned in to watching, you know, football and, you know, on the day off, you know, like if you're a Nigerian supporter and, you know, when Nigeria is not playing, you go, well, what else is on? And, you know, there's this Serie A tournament. I'm going to watch that. So I don't know how that would be received. Back to Julian's point, I agree. I think the smaller clubs, they'll have 1 to 3 players, right, at most. I don't know how the big clubs are going to be with, if they're going to be okay with it. I know they'll have a lot of players. They'll have more players at the World Cup for obvious reasons. Is it a good opportunity for them to play their squad players / Primavera players? And like, does that 28-year-old who's a squad player, does he want to go out of the country over the World Cup break to play in a bunch of friendlies, glorified friendlies, and potentially get injured and then potentially lose out on playing time? I know the players don't really have a say at the end of the day, but that's just kind of something that I'm thinking about when we talk about this tournament.
Okay, Chris, I'm glad that you brought that up because I understand. Okay, so let's kind of break it down where this idea came from. Okay, so earlier reports, I think it was early on in the season, the Serie A made contact with Charlie Stellano and the other guy from, I don't mention other names, from another podcast who they do other stuff. Okay, contact him. Charlie Stellano has experience in running such tournaments like the ICC. You all remember the International Champion Cup. I know I've been to multiple games in Toronto at Gillette Stadium and in Boston or Foxborough. Listen, that idea, you know, ICC is good in the sense that it's in the off season, not as
preseason.
Yes, exactly, preseason. Yeah. Not as Chris said, middle of the season because of this ridiculous World Cup being played in November, when in December you have, end of December you have games to play in January. So, you know, what happened if Italy, let's say hypothetically, which is most likely going to be the scenario, Italy doesn't make the World Cup. So you're going to have all of the Italian national player teams playing in this tournament what happened if Chris, like Chris said, what happened if one gets injured? Because they're playing in some glorified tournament in the middle of the season. So, you like, it's just, like, logistically, it is a stupid idea. If the report would have came out and said, okay, well, we're going to have this 20-team tournament in, I don't know, July before the season starts in North America, that would have been an excellent idea because everyone, I think in North America and even in Italy, will be focused on this 20-team tournament because it's something that they've never seen before. You don't do it when you're in the middle of a season, of an actual season that counts. I mean, it's overkill. It doesn't make any sense, which I wouldn't expect anything less coming from Lega Serie A and the two people that I mentioned. Anyone else wants to jump in?
Yeah, go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
No, well, I want to say that, like, we complain that they don't do anything.
But listen, there's a difference.
But sorry, Mike. Do something. So
okay, Mike, I gotta jump in. I'm sorry. there's doing something for the sake of doing something, and then there's doing something right. This is the sake of doing something for doing something. It doesn't make any sense. Go ahead. I want to get it off my chest. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, again, is there a capacity to do this in a different way that makes that checks all the boxes instead of just some of the boxes? Sure. But at the same time, again, at least they're trying to think outside of the box and how to develop some sort of, you know, further way to expand their the league's horizons. Because, again, otherwise, when they talk about things like the potential to add playoffs to extend the season and really have something beyond the Serie A Scudetto race, people also lose their minds, as we had you losing your mind last week. So about the potential of after the season's done to add some sort of playoffs for like a Super Bowl kind of end to the season, right?
So yeah, I still don't agree with that, but yeah.
But that's just the thing. You're never going to agree with anything to do because you don't think they're doing their job properly.
I just told you what I would agree with. I would agree with a tournament of such a format.
What if they did that? Okay, Paula, let me ask you this. What if they did that? They did that, and they called it the playoffs in North America. What would you say?
I'm not answering that hypothetical because it that wouldn't make any sense. Why would all 20 teams participate in a playoff tournament in North America?
I'm just saying, Paul.
Well, that there you go. Anyway, Chris.
Yes.
Did you have something else to add?
Present.
I was just gonna say I could get behind and I could support some tournament type event in North America, basically an ICC type thing, but if it was only Serie A. I don't know how you do that logistically because you can't have all 20 teams playing each other in a preseason tournament. It needs to be similar to ICC, like groups of 3 to 5 teams that play each other, and maybe you have, you know, one grand finale at the end. So I don't know if you split Serie A up into 4 divisions of 5, everybody plays each other once, and there's a, you know, the group winners play in an additional game. I've put zero thought into that, but I feel like that's how they'd have to break it down for it to make any logistical sense, because most people are not going to go watch, you know, Empoli and Venezia in preseason. I feel like we would, but you have to sprinkle in like an Inter, a Milan, a Juve, a Lazio, Roma in each group to kind of be the headliner, if that makes sense. So it would have to be something like that for me anyways, if it was going to get any steam.
Okay, so Julian, I want to ask you this question. You know, I'm going to put on my my cap, my thinking cap. I don't want to use another word, but I'm putting my thinking cap.
Your thinking jug.
Yeah. and say, wouldn't the reason why this report or this idea was reported on or developed was probably because the fact that they still want to keep the ICC in the summer. What do you think about that?
What does one have to do with the other?
Well, because, like I said, the, one of the organizers that Serie A is contacting is also the organizer, the marketer, chief marketing officer, you know, the organizer for the ICC, the International Champions Cup.
I mean, they can run both. The thing is, you can't do this in the preseason because you can't have all 20 teams in North America for a month. You can do it during the World Cup because it's during the World Cup. There's no other issues, in my opinion. Now, in regards to what you're saying about injuries, yes, you wouldn't want anybody to get hurt. Nobody ever wants to get hurt, but that's a risk every time you step on the soccer field. It's a risk when you step on the training, like, training pitch, right? Like, it's always something that can happen. Obviously, you never wanted to, and I mean, obviously, in training, it's usually very unlikely, but it's something that can always happen, regardless of what game you're playing.
Listen, you're right, but I think it's a unnecessary risk at this point. They're already playing, you know, Chris, I don't know if you did, you ran the numbers a few months ago, but you're probably playing like 50 games this year.
I mean, the top, are you including preseason?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably around there.
Yeah. So, and then playing this glorified friendly tournament adds at least another 4 games for each team.
Minimum.
That not necessarily have to be played. I think it's a risk that should not be taken in the middle of the season. That's my opinion. Do we have any last comments before we move on to who am I discussion?
Yeah, man, just don't be afraid to change.
I'm not afraid of change. Like I said, there is changing for the sake of changing, which is what this Lega Serie A likes to do and likes to spout. And then there's actually changing for the better, changing for what I like to call is the greater good. If they want to market in North America, do it properly. Do it when they're all off and not focusing on countries that actually will qualify for the World Cup. When all those countries are going to be focusing on their national teams playing in Qatar. It's just common sense, in my opinion. But anyway, before I say something that I shouldn't say, let's move on. our friend of the show, at @go_2_church, asked us to discuss what do we think about countries taking advantage of their climate for international games.
Let's go. We accepted his question?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Gee, who vetted that?
Paulo.
Well, he answered vintage who am I correctly. So we have to let it in. And it is culture related.
It is.
Chris, what do you think?
As long as it's, I'm stuck. I know where the question's coming from. At the end of the day, every club, every country is going to look for some sort of advantage when they're hosting. FIFA has their protocols, their requirements, I guess we'll call them, for hosting with regards to, you know, pitch size, capacity for fans, spectators, media availability, blah blah blah. I know it sucks for players, and maybe sometimes there is a bit of a health hazard when they're playing at very high altitude, and if somebody's not used to playing there, it could be dangerous. As we saw last week, playing in the cold in Minnesota, I think it was a player from Honduras. Sorry, two players from Honduras went off at halftime with reported, I don't think they had hypothermia, but that was the concern at the time. But again, the conditions were Were they ideal? No, but they weren't dangerous per se, in my opinion anyways. Same thing, playing at high altitude. It suits that home country and some of the players that are new to that environment. Maybe they don't last as long or they're not as effective. But I want to assume that FIFA has some sort of guidelines in place there with regards to weather. You know, if it gets too cold or if it gets too hot, there has to be a water break, as we know, stuff like that. So I don't know how much more FIFA can do to regulate and manage what sort of conditions or climate teams play in when they're hosting these international matches.
All right, Michael.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much that nailed it. But my question outside of that is, or I guess not more of a statement, I'm curious to see when a team is going to, you know, do this. They're going to play in these certain conditions that they're, they think is going to be, you know, the really putting it to the other team, and then they're going to screw themselves over. Cause you know, just like in Canada, when you're playing in snow, like it's not fun. So like, there's going to be a time when someone does this and then someone on their own team is like, oh, well, I'm also struggling. And then, oh, okay, I just gave up a goal. Like, it's going to happen. So you're playing with fire, I think, at that point.
Yeah, like, and to that point, Mike, I don't know the USA roster, you know, very well, but I'm willing to bet that there's a player on that team that born and raised in, like, in California and, you know, has played in maybe professionally in a hot climate his entire career. And then last week he had to go play a game in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So it maybe affects one or two players. I think these countries are assuming that the majority of their players are familiar with the conditions and that their opponent isn't.
And Julian.
I don't think as Chris said, I think he got it spot on. Like, teams are going to use whatever they can to their advantage. And I mean, I'm kind of all for it. I was kind of a fan of seeing the games in the cold. You have Mexico, I think even Bolivia, they play the games in high altitude. Teams are always going to do it. I don't know. Let them do it. It seems to add a little bit of a flair to the game.
Yeah, some gamesmanship a little bit, right?
Yeah. And also some of the other South American countries too, when they play the games, you know, in the summertime, their summertime at least, you have like, you know, 80%+ humidity or something like that, like something disgusting mm-hmm. like that. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes you just can't help it as well. Also could also be the same thing for clubs. Just take the field at the pitch at San Siro. Maybe they didn't water it on purpose so they can get an advantage against some of the other teams. You know, a lot of people complain about the pitches in Serie A, and I wouldn't be surprised if some of the smaller clubs do it on purpose. So when they play a bigger club that likes to pass the ball on the ground, mm-hmm. they struggle.
Yeah, it's true.
So. It's on both levels of the game, and I think it's just part of the game. And as Chris's favorite player likes to say, Alessandro Florenzi, that you could argue about the pitch, but champions don't argue and they play the game. I'm paraphrasing, but still.
Yeah. I thought his favorite player was Bernardeschi.
Oh God!
it used to be Steven Lichtenstein. I remember that.
Oh yeah.
God.
All right, Michael, I think it's for that time of the episode.
It's that time for America's favorite segment. Oh, wait.
Oh!
Who am I?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Who am I? I don't know.
All right, so I am back this week after last week's, I won't call it a failure, but Paulo's attempt at hosting Who Am I? Or he claimed it was going to be an easy one, but
it was
myself,
an easy one.
Michael and Julian had no idea what he was talking about. So I am back with, I won't call it easy, but it's not a difficult one, in my opinion.
Grazie.
Who says that? Paulo says that. All right, we'll get going. Hint number one. This player has won a Europa League, a Champions League, and a top five European League title. Hint number two, he's been teammates with Florenzi, Yanga Mbiwa, and Flamini. And then hint number three, he has led one of Europe's top five leagues in goals.
Well, there he is, Giroud. Was it actually Giroud, though?
Yes, of course. Who else would I have picked for this week? I was hoping it would be answered quickly. Sorry, Julian. I had to.
Poor Julian.
It was a very easy decision this week for who to pick. I had to pick Giroud. So, yes.
Terrible.
Very good. Terrible.
Oh, come on. At least mine was like, it made you think. This is like, I got it like, what, in 10 seconds, not even.
That was the point. We had to make up for last week's blunder.
Oh, blunder. Come on. Anyway. Since that was such an easy, who am I? It kind of threw me off. Chris, do we have any news to get to?
Yes. So as we have mentioned on Twitter and last week's pod, we had our jersey, AC Milan jersey giveaway. And as promised, we will be announcing the winner. So our lucky winner, and thank you for retweeting and tagging a friend on the jersey giveaway post. It goes to Milan Mania. So thank you very much. You are the winner. We'll connect with you on the Twitter. And we'll set up a delivery and get that to you. So thank you to everybody who retweeted. Yes, sir. And we may or may not have some other jersey giveaways in the near future.
Well, we'll have jersey giveaways. I don't know.
I know. I'm just trying to be conspicuous by saying may or may not.
We may not.
Paul doesn't understand nuance here.
Wait, shut up for a second. We may or may not have more Milan content to give away. Put it that way.
Fine. It's about you. Your world. We're living in it.
We're just living it.
All right. I think it's that time of the show where we ask if we missed anything. We'll go Julian first.
No, I think we got... we went pretty in-depth in this episode.
Yeah. Michael?
Yeah, we just didn't talk about... Vlahovic being tied with Immobile for Capo.
Okay, there you go. That's good. And then Chris.
No, I think it was, like Julian said, covered a lot. And there's midweek this week?
Copa.
Right, yeah. So
yeah. Next week is Serie A midweek. So there's going to be Calcio 1 pretty much almost every day this month.
Next week's Champions League.
Yes.
Are you sure?
Positive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe
alrighty then.
Maybe. But
okay.
Next week for sure is Europe.
Is Europe? Okay. Yeah. So
it's
still, I think.
So that's because Paul, it's for Inter, it's Roma, Napoli, Liverpool.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. So there you go. So there's still going to be midweek anyway all this month.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Then on that note, thank you for listening, everyone. I believe Michael will be back next week to host. So thank you, Michael, again. And until then, have a good week. Enjoy all the soccer and bye.